This coming Shabbos is going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Nitzavim, which of course begins, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. Today you're all standing. What's the difference between the Nitzavim and Omeid? And moreover, didn't the people see that they were all standing? So what did Moshe Rabbeinu add by telling them, Atem Nitzavim, you're standing? So Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi explained that the idea of Hityatzvut, of standing at attention as opposed to Amidah, or standing, refers to a status wherein everyone present stands at the ready to perform a particular mission together. Each person in the job dedicates himself or herself to that job fully. And so here's the job. Here the job is to place one's entire being at the service of Hashem, or what he calls the idea of Einod Melvado, the understanding that you're fully here. You are fully here. Not Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. On the other hand, it is pointed out in the name of the Nesiv HaShalom that Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem actually points the opposite direction. On Rosh Hashanah, we stand as one united community. And that's what gives us the opportunity to go ahead and be successful in our din. We're told, Mechote Beitzecha Ad Shoev Meimecha. Why is there a distinction between the two? The wood choppers and carriers, aren't they at the same stage of life, the same level of the pecking order? So I remember seeing once in the Shivim Panim LaTorah, who notes that the axe never thinks that he's above the chopper who wields him. The bucket never thinks he's beneath the one drawing the water. And the same lesson is important for Jewish leadership. It need not to think of itself as too far above or too far beneath the people to be with them. We're told that Kies Asher Yeshno Po Imanu Omeid Hayom. For those who are here with us are standing here, and even those who aren't standing here. Now, how can there be a bris created if part of some of the people, namely those not yet born who lack a guf, how are they supposed to be obligated in a bris? How could they be involved if they're not here? So the Chida explains that within each guf of a person is his parents' guf, and since the ancestors were at our Sinai, our bodies are included as well. And thus, says the Chida, when a parent takes on a hiddur mitzvah or a practice, technically, so should the children. They've already been following it for years. Children are the outgrowth of their parents. So Rabbi Yisrael Reisman quoted Reb Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal, who explained that, therefore, when one learns in memory of a parent, he or she doesn't need to mention the parent's name, since it's understood you're already there. It's like you're learning. So, of course, it's a zechus aliyas neshama. And the Mishnah Berurah makes this point in regard to yizkor donations. And thus, children should strive to keep their parents' practices even in mitzvah performance. And why is that? Because you're already keeping it. It's something that is a continuation of that which you've been doing for years. We're told, Anistaro Hashem Elokeinu. We're told that the hidden is for Hashem, but Hanigdos, the revealed, is Lanu Levaneinu Ad Olam, that it's for us and our children forever. Alas, Osas, Kol Debrei HaTorah Azos. And on a simple level, this pasuk refers to the mutual responsibility that all Jews have for one another regarding the performance of mitzvot. So Moshe Stab of Kerem Yavna added that there is an additional level explanation and revelation of why it is that Hashem gave us the Torah only to see us misuse it and deserve punishment accordingly. According to Rav Stab, it seems to the human eye that the world is run exclusively according to the laws of Schar V'Onesh, of reward and punishment. And when Bnei Yisrael act as they're supposed to, they're blessed with good things. Whereas when they sin, there's Hester Panim, there's a hiddenness of Hashem's hand. However, even during times of Hester Panim, there's a higher order from the ultimate planner that guarantees that the world will reach its ultimate perfection in some way or another. Even those tragedies which seem to us as punishment and suffering, or those things which seem extraneous or peripheral, will turn out to have meaning of bringing the world to its final perfection in the end. And that's the Pasuk's intention here also. The Nistaros, the hidden hand that guides all of history, is Hashem Elokeinu, it's godly. And we have maybe a faint awareness of it. However, Haniglos, the revealed, in other words, the observing of the mitzvos, the learning of the Torah, even though we may not see the immediate purpose in them, is Lanu Vaninu Ad Olam La'asos is called Debrei HaTorah Azos. It's in our hands to live by, because in the end of the days we'll see that everything was under Hashem's guiding hand, and we were just supposed to turn around and play our part in the process. We're also told, Vayaki Avo Alecha Kol Advarim Mo'ila HaBracha V'Aklala. It'll be when the Bracha and the Klala come, V'ashivos El Hashem Levavecha, and you'll return to Hashem. So Rav Shechter explained to us that the Torah is identifying the concept of Mashiach in this pasuk. The Ramban explains that one who denies Mashiach is not only denying the words of the Nevi'im, but also the words of Moshe. And how is that so? So Rav Shechter explained to us that Hashem doesn't make miracles for no reason. The creation of the world was a miracle. The world makes no sense and hasn't since day one when Cain killed Habel. However, we believe that one day there will be an explanation of purpose to all of creation and all of the subsequent history. That day will be at the days of Mashiach. And so therefore, Vishavta, you have a responsibility to get ready to go there. We're told, Ki HaMitzvah Zos Lo VaShamayim Hi, it's not in the heavens. And Rashi explains that if the Torah were to be in heaven, you need to scale the heavens to find it. In other words, there are no excuses to not study Torah to the best of our ability. Right? There's no ever any head there, and to extend ourselves as much as humanly possible. You know, Rabbi Saratskin once told his son, Rav Yitzchak Saratskin, that when he was in such pain, that was the best time to study Torah, because one who goes to the limits to study Torah today will certainly get to continue his Torah study when the limits are constrained in the future. We're also told at the end of the parasha that we have a responsibility, uvacharta b'chayim, to choose life. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky compared this choice to a worker who did some work and was owed $100. The householder offered him 50 lottery tickets valued at $2 apiece to take the deal. So it's 50 lottery tickets at $2, so it's $100. But instead of selling them, the worker played the lottery and lost everything. So now he had nothing. No money on the one hand and no prize on the other. So he complained to the householder, who told him that there was no reason to waste one's time and gave him a chance. In this world, the only way we pay for things is with life, and we need to use common sense to enjoy life to its entirety. So using life wisely and to invest in amassing Torah mitzvahs will determine what will happen when our time is up, or basically, did we waste our time on that which was fancy and schmancy? We conclude the shir with a thought from the Haftorah. We're told, Lo Yeyamer Lach Olda Azuva Olda Artech Lo Yeyamer Od Shmama, that they will never say that she's forsaken and her land will never be called desolate. And Rav Shimon Schwab explains that the Navi is not merely telling us that there will never be another Churban. He's trying to tell it to get the idea across that in the future there will be no need to recall that there was a Gullus either. The new relationship, like a young marriage, will exist without the history of pain and trauma. And that's what we're hoping for, and it's our sincerest hope and prayer that we achieve that quickly in our days so that we can merit the ultimate end, an end that will be good for us and for the entire world. Shabbat Shalom to all.